Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Unity of Whidbey. How lovely to begin with that sound, and that all of us
did you hear
help to make it.
After the end of the chant, the silence was so palpable. And where did that come from?
We all created the silence and the sound, yeah. Mm. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jana. It's lovely to have your contribution. It's beautiful. Thank you. And it's so perfect for what I want to talk about today, because I'm quite enthusiastic about the World Day of Prayer. And it's going to be on September 9th. Well, it starts on the evening of the 9th, and then it's on the 10th, so 9th and 10th. And when you think about the value of it being the World Day of Prayer, so there will be people all over the world participating in this prayer ceremony. And I'm hoping that we actually open the doors of our sanctuary and witness the World Day of Prayer, you know, because they're going to have video to go with it. And in the meantime, people should be, can be, not should, take that back. People can be thinking about what is it, what are my prayer requests? What is it that I want the silent unity or the people at Unity or the people of the world to be praying about? And so that's the World Day of Prayer on the 9th, starts in the evening of the 9th and then the 10th. And the theme of it is Love is Alive. How perfect is that? Love is alive all over the world. And, you know, I don't really want to do anything else except go forward with World Day of Prayer. So maybe at some other point we'll have other announcements, okay? I'm in charge. Okay. So the theme of World Day of Prayer is Love is Alive. And for my inspiration, I want to read from this flyer because it's so beautiful. Love is the power that moves through me now. It's the rhythm of my breath, the clarity of my thoughts, and the strength of my steps. Love is alive in me, radiant and sure, shaping my life with intention. I speak words of blessing and embody acts of kindness. Love gathers the scattered places of my life into wholeness. Love multiplies joy and expands vision. Love calls me beyond fear into freedom. Secured in this truth, I rise, and as I rise, I call forth the love within us all to lift us higher, to deepen our faith, and to carry us forward into greater good. Together, powered by the activity of love, we are faith in action and prayer in motion. If you would, please, let us affirm, love leads me. Faith steadies me.
Prayer carries me forward.
Okay, thank you. With each breath, I choose love as my path, my presence, and my power. And so it is. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. Paramahansa Yogananda has said, kindness is the light that dissolves all walls between souls, families, and nations. At this time in our lives, peace is what we would like. Peace is what we want to create. Carrying peace in our heart is what
we are. So let us share that peace quietly with one another now. In finding things to share with you, I came across the following. You have to die as a seed in order to live as a tree. And that is something to ponder, isn't it? Die as a seed in order to live as a tree. And you know, we look around and we see the trees, and we're so grateful when we actually open our eyes and see them. They're so important to us. And right now, let us share our earth prayer. Let us remember we are given partnership as stewards of the earth, and we have a responsibility to live in a right relationship with the whole of God's creation. Thank you. And remembering that love leads, faith steadies, and prayer carries me forward, which is the theme of the World Day of Prayer. And now I'm inviting you, if you would like, to share special prayers that you might be holding in your heart with the whole congregation here. So does anybody have a prayer that they would like to speak?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Padma, and sorry about this. My mobility is sort of catching up with me, but I'm working on it. I thought it was interesting when you talked about the World Prayer Day, and then you had a beautiful quote about love right afterwards. Because the topic we chose is friendship, divine friendship specifically, because there's lots of different kinds of friendship. But I'm here to talk about divine friendship because of the same reason that you described for the need for world prayer, which is that we live in a very turbulent world today. And the solutions, you know, there's many ways to approach it. And I think last year when we came, we talked about how to cope with turbulent times. And today we chose the topic of divine friendship because that is the way to deal with turbulent times. When, you know, since I was little, I've heard it said. I wasn't raised in a Christian family, so I wasn't familiar with the Bible things. But you keep hearing it said that when we die and we go to St. Peter, he's at the gate, and the one question he asks us is, how much have you loved? In the end, literally in the end, when people pass or are in the process of passing, that's what it comes down to. I watched my parents go through the last stage of life. They, you know, we brought them up from California. They were in an assisted living near us. And in the end, they kept downsizing to the point where it was just a bed, you know, one room that they were in. All their belongings, all their things that they loved through the years, all the people they knew through the years, it was all gone. And it was just them in their bed. And what mattered and what they realized what mattered was love, was the friendship the relationships that we have, those are the most precious. They're not things, that's the word, but they are the most precious things that we have, because through them we learn to perfect unconditioned love. And until we, Yogananda puts it this way, that until we perfect unconditioned love with at least one other person, if not many, many more, but until we truly perfect that, we cannot experience the cosmic heart. We have to go through the doorway of practicing and experiencing love with others. And I brought up Yogananda's Whispers from Eternity. These are prayer demands, he called them, because we are children of God and we have the right to demand these things. And all of them, this whole book's worth, are not prayers for things. They're prayers for divine qualities in our lives and how to demand from God that we get to experience them in this life. And then at the end of the book, he has some longer ones. I'm not going to read all of it. It's a long one on friendship. But here's what he says. Is it the one thinking in two bodies? Or is it like two strong stallions, disparate in color and mien, pulling the chariot of life together to the single goal with one mind in sight? Is friendship founded on equalities or inequalities? Is it built on diverse stones of differences? Is friendship the unthinkingly agreeing, the hand in hand, blindly walking of two souls, foolishly rejoicing in their united folly? Friendship is noble, fruitful, holy, when two separate souls march in difference, yet in harmony, agreeing and disagreeing. Friendship grows in both likeness and difference. Friendship sleeps or dies in familiarity. Ah, friendship, where thy soul-born flowers fall, there on that sacred shrine of fragrance, the friend of all friends craves to come and remain. He puts it so beautifully. That's just an excerpt, few excerpts from it. But it's not that we all have to think alike or be alike. It's actually in the differences that we experience the refinement of the ego, because we're rubbing against that ego. And when we gain maturity in love and friendship, then we realize that, I mean, it takes patience, certainly. We all know that. Those who've had close friendships, which is virtually everyone, it takes a depth of being able to step back and say, okay, well, that isn't what I would do, but, you know, how beautiful. That's how they're doing it. And to learn to appreciate and actually fall in love with the differences. So there are many things in our spiritual life that speak to this particular point. We talk about do unto others as we would have others do unto us. So these are the ways I'm speaking of divine friendship. It's more blessed to give than to receive, which we all know in relationship, all relationships, parents and children, friends, divine friends, marriage, all of the relationships we can think of. We want to get to the point where we do as we would have it be done unto us, you know, and pause when we find ourselves getting into negativity, anger, jealousy, all those kinds of things. Because our true nature is divine. And so we, in our true nature, we're going to reach for these higher qualities and learn to be patient, learn to be kind, learn to be considerate of others, and so on. But we're not always in our true nature. And we get irritable, and we get, you know, short-sighted, and we get judgmental. You know, these we can't deny these qualities. They exist, and all of us have experienced some versions of them in our lives. But what we want to do is remember ourselves in our true nature, and then slowly but surely act accordingly. I remember there was one man I worked with years ago, and he would really irritate me. It was a difficult working relationship that we had. And he was very smart, and he knew what my buttons were, and he found them every time. And so one day, years into this, I decided, okay, I'm just not going to react. I'm when it happens, I recognize it, and I'm just going to be still. And I found with practice that I was able to do it. So it brought me in a car like to neutral gear. I was in neutral. I couldn't be positive yet, but I was in neutral. You take steps. You work with your nature. You work with your feelings, you be honest, you can't brush them under, you know, the rug. We have to recognize it and then take the steps to spiritualize that reality to your true nature. When I was a little girl, we immigrated when I was 10 years old. Our family was Dutch. I didn't speak a word of English. I was in fifth grade and, you know, went in there cold, you might say, not only in a new class, in a new country, but in a new language. And I had to learn everything. Well, you know what it's like for any of us, but certainly for 10-year-olds, you want friends. You need friends. And so there was this one little girl. She was just the kindest person you've ever met. She always immediately reached out to me. She was a little chubby. She had beautiful blonde curly hair. She was just nice. And for the times, this was 1960, her name was Lois. You know, that was a common name back then. And I remember her as just being a real gift, you know, who came to me then. Well, there was, as there is in any small group in my class, there was the popular girl. And she had, you know, a clique of friends, maybe 8 or 10 or so. She came up to me one day And she said, I'm willing to be your friend, but you have to promise not to hang out with Lois anymore, only with me and my friends. I was shocked, you know. It was such a mean thing to ask of me and to say. And what she was offering is, look, I can get you 10 friends immediately. You just have to give up that one. And I remember going home and just crying my eyes out. And my mother asked me what's going on. And I told her what happened. And with wisdom, my mother had a really good intuition. And with wisdom, she said to me, well, Lois has been incredibly kind to you. It would be disloyal to break off your friendship with her. So, you know, I instantly recognized that as true. And I proceeded to continue in my friendship with Lois. And would you believe it that after a few weeks, this other gal started coming around too and wanting us to be friends. But I learned a powerful lesson on loyalty in friendship. And that is, Yogananda used to say, loyalty is the first law of God. And that always puzzled me. I thought, well, I think love is the first law of God. But I realized that without loyalty, you can never truly experience love. And so it is a very, very powerful and important thing. So I leave you on that note as we live in these crazy times to, you know, block out the noise of the world and focus on our relationships, on our friendships, on our community, as you were saying just now. Community is a very big part of our lives. We have a number of large intentional spiritual communities around the world. Because in community, we work on those relationships. And we have the opportunity to look in a lot of mirrors and be reminded of who and what we really are, children of God.
But I want to thank Barbara for the invitation to come again and to meet all of you again in this spiritual intentional community. And particularly thank you, Yana, for doing these chants by Yogananda on Krishna Priya's lovely harmonium. Just the other day, and this is, I'm not a musician, but somehow I was inspired to record about 20 or so chants on the harmonium with one of our recording people. And I'm not a music person, but I was saying earlier that we were trained by our teacher, Swami Kriyananda, who in turn was trained and commissioned by Paramahansa Yogananda. And he taught it. He had a beautiful voice, and he chanted these chants of Yogananda and some of his own that were quite lovely. Well, as music has evolved within our communities, it has taken the form, which is lovely, it's beautiful, but of an ensemble with guitars and different instruments. I love all of it. But a part of that original personal calling, listen, listen, listen to my heart song, is lost in the big band sort of experience. It's beautiful, and we here in the West have been raised with that and really appreciate that. But that silent personal yearning for freedom, for love, for all the qualities that we know on some level are our own, has been lost. So I made the resolution that with my lousy voice and lousy musicianship, I'm going to record these chants the way I learned them from my teacher. And all these young kids, as I call them, anybody under 50, just kidding, they can do what they want with these chants, but I'm going to put them on the website and you know, so on and so forth. Because divine friendship ultimately is friendship with the divine. And there are, as there always is in this world of duality, as we call it in the words of India, two faces to God. There's your face, and there's his or her, however you want to put a gender on that, it's up to you. Meaning, and the essential teaching from the East, from India, is that face is within us. As Jesus himself said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. And that message is growing, I would say, more than slowly. That message, and I see it here in unity. I just love how so much of what is expressed here at Unity is an affirmation of that which is not visible. Okay, and when we look at the evolution of science, it's completely focused on that which is invisible. Whether it's string theory, quantum physics, everything that's evolving is everything we cannot taste, see, feel, touch, smell, whatever. And that's the essence of not just material reality, but the reality out of which the material has come. And so traditions and I don't care for the word organizations, but places like Unity and Ananda and many, many others, Church of Religious Science and throughout the world, are focusing on the inner experience of who and what we really are. Now, my own journey, I went to India in 1975, drove overland by car from Europe, and my own journey was spurred largely by the inner path of who am I? And so my first teacher was Ramana Maharshi. How many here have heard of Ramana? Anybody? Okay, a few of you, all right. And he's a jnana yogi, in other words, who am I? And it's the self-inquiry. Sit still in meditation, watch your thoughts. Who it is? Who is it that's thinking? Well, that's a very dry kind of path. It isn't really when you go deeply into it, but in the beginning it seems a little mental, right? So it's not, and I found too, it just wasn't all that satisfying. And I love philosophy, and I write hundreds of blogs on this sort of thing, but ultimately, as you awaken to who is thinking, who is feeling, who is having that reaction to that schmuck over there, you realize that there's somebody else inside. Anybody here know who Anandamoyi Ma was? Is featured in autobiography, the great woman saint, great devotee. She would say, when I was a child, I was the same. When I was a girl, I was the same. When I was married and my husband tried to approach me, I was the same. He got a shock of his life and became a monk. But always, I am the same. And I remember our friend and teacher, Swami Kriyananda, he said, you know, I look at those pictures of me as a boy. It's the same old guy, right? I mean, how many lifetimes have we lived, you and I, already in this body? I mean, you look back, all the things you've done and places you've been and some of the stupid things you did, maybe, and some of the wonderful things you did. And it's the same old person, isn't it? And so that's the inner path of who am I? But there's another way in this form of duality, which is the I-thou. Who art thou? Who is behind this vast universe? Who is behind all these thoughts which I share with other people? And on that front, there are a couple of things I wanted to share. In the Eastern tradition of yoga in India and so forth is the practice of japa. It's the mental repetitions of the names of, of the divine in whatever form you hold dear, typically. But it can also be an affirmation in our own sort of Western context. I am thine, be thou mine. It's the constant inner prayer, this pray unceasingly. But in the Western tradition, there was, even before Christianity in the Greek tradition, was anybody know the words Kyrie eleison, Christe eleison? Yeah, oh, okay. Well, Christe eleison, eleison, it's translated typically as God have mercy upon me, a sinner, you know. That's old stuff. But the word mercy comes from eleos. And eleos actually means, you won't believe this, olive oil. Because of the healing aspects of olive oil. And it's not mercy in the judgmental sense. That's our English spin and our, you might say, Christian spin. But what it's saying is, Lord, come to me as comfort. Come to me as love. Thou art love. And so, you know, Christi eleis, anyway, suddenly the words disappear. But it's, Lord, have mercy. Christ, have mercy. Well, that became, in the Orthodox tradition, any of you know what the Jesus prayer is? Okay, well, that it's in English, it's, Lord, have mercy upon me. And there's different variations of it. Most of them drop the word sinner, which is a good thing, and so forth. But that derives from what was called the Hesychast movement in the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th centuries in the Orthodox tradition. And there's a beautiful book that came out much later of a Russian pilgrim, and it's a wonderful book to read, The Way of the Pilgrim. And he goes to all these starets, which we would say spiritual teachers or gurus, whatever, and he asks them, what does it mean to pray unceasingly? And so he had to develop on his own, and he came to, and he found this tradition of Kyrie eleison, Christe eleison, that he would chant to himself. And then in more modern times, 14th century, we're moving ahead here, was Brother Lawrence. And he had been a soldier and so on, and in the 30 Years' War, and then he became a monk. And he, too, wanted to know, what does it mean to pray unceasingly? And so he worked in the kitchen. He was sort of clumsy. He was always dropping pots and pans and making a mess everywhere. He wasn't the brightest star in the chandelier, but he had great devotion. And so he didn't have any particular formula, as in the Hesychast movement or the Jesus prayer, but he had that feeling. And he said it progressed for him in three stages. First was the mental thought, maybe every minute or as often as he could. And it's an easy practice to describe, a difficult practice to do. But he started, okay, it's a mental thing. I remember the presence of God. I want to talk to you. And you know, what do we do most of the day? We talk to ourselves, right? And if you were to say it out loud, anybody else would hear you, they say, boy, you're boring. I read somewhere there's thousands of thoughts that go through our head every day. It's embarrassing, really, if you really were to talk out loud. Well, that boring monologue, why can't it be a dialogue? And, you know, God is shy and humble, really. We see in the when we come over here, we love to find an Airbnb and just be here on Whidbey. And the place we were in last night, beautiful giant trees, you know, it's just so lovely to be still and to know. But it's through the stillness that the Spirit awakens within us. Because all this mental chatter and our bodies and the world around us keep us pretty well engaged, but we add to that greatly by the narratives that we do. And so the Old Testament, be still and know that I am God, And who is the I am exactly? Anyway, is what where meditation comes into it, the practice of stillness. And so Brother Lawrence would, he wanted to do this as the pilgrim, the Russian pilgrim did, not just when he was doing his prayers in the monastery or what have you, but moment to moment. So it, he started with the mind, and then he said it sort of dropped into the heart. Whether or not there was a word formula was, it was less important than the feeling. And then he said it finally became a vibration, a connection, you know, which is, as science tells us, it's all vibration. It's all electromagnetism, okay? We're all just sort of doing this. Why not vibrate with something greater than our own selves? And then finally in the 20th century, 19th, 20th century, a very famous Protestant minister was sent off to the Philippines, Frank Laubach. And he found that the Filipinos in Mindanao weren't all that interested in being converted to Christianity, so he had nothing to do. But he started a very famous thing. He said, teach one, reach one. And it went all over the world into about 100 different countries. So he created alphabets for the different dialects that he encountered. And so he had nothing else to do. But then during that period, he had the same issue. He said, how do I know God? And so he began a ministry when he later came back to the United States. And he said, I'm trying to get ministers to talk about God. Sounds amazing to me, but in any case, I guess that was the state of affairs back in his day. Yeah. But he too wrote a beautiful book worth reading, Practice the Pre- No, Letters of a Mystic. Is that the...
Letters of a Modern Mystic.
Of a Modern Mystic, yes. And so the practice of opening our hearts to that presence within, which has its basis in being quiet, even just for a few minutes. And most of the traditions, East and West, including the Jesus Prayer, was done in concert with the breath. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me, or however you want it to, you know. Swami Kriyananda told us that for him, his japa was Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru. And, you know, as I progressed through life, and I love philosophy, as Padma knows, I read all sorts of books on this, that, and the other thing. And I don't know that this, any of it has changed me at all, but I still like reading and writing. But this is where it's at. It's in the heart. It's in the recognition that I am. I mean, as I say, as you get older, you look back all the things you've done and said, and you realize, really? I did that? And how much of it? You know, it's all pretty neutral in a way as you look back, just a memory. I mean, some things you're proud of, some things you're not proud of, but over time, most of it just drifts away like driftwood. And so who's left? You and me. And when that final exam comes, everything else, as Padma said earlier, will drift away. And who's left? And that's the great teaching, East and West. And divine friend, there is that friend within us who always accepts us, is always loyal to us, always has hope for us. I've been doing this thing, I'm not doing it presently, but for a year or more I was giving these talks online to a Presbyterian group in Lahore, Pakistan. Don't ask any questions. Why they wanted me, I don't know, but it was charming. The children especially are so sweet to tell stories to and so forth. But you know, it's universal. And the language of the spirit is always love and connection. And so, you know, our philosophies are, you know, I represent the Kriya Yoga tradition, and, you know, they're I don't even know what Presbyterians do. I don't have a clue, but they seem to be interested in what I had to share. And so during that time then, I was sort of forced, or inspired to study the Old Testament to tell the stories to the children and to the adult class that I would do on Saturday nights. And so I learned, how many of you really love the Old Testament? Right. I get that. But what I learned in reading the stories from the standpoint of the inner path and the soul is that it was always about, no matter how many times you fail, redemption is held out to you. Hope and promise of salvation, to use the terms that they use, is always there. You know, I wrote a book a couple of years ago, what was it called?
Once and Future Christ.
The Once and Future Christ. And I'm tempted to write another one, because being raised Catholic and all that, and studied for the priesthood, and my brother's a priest in Spokane, and he knows I'm going to hell, so, you know, I might as well check it out, right? I think there was some famous saint, I don't remember who she was, but she said, she prayed, I want to go to hell to help people. Isn't that amazing? I'm not sure I'm at that point, but maybe I'll get there by and by. I don't know. But that, I realized it was great, very inspirational to me to read those stories, which otherwise I'm not particularly attracted to, and realize that again and again, as often as those doggone Israelites blew it and got taken away to Babylon or wherever they got taken away to, redemption was promised. And I don't really know how people can believe in an eternal damnation. I mean, anybody here into that? No, of course not. You're into unity. And so things have to change, don't they? But at the heart of all the beliefs, which won't save us, as Yogananda put it, is the heart. And that friendship with that which is true, with that which is always there, watching you, comforting you, guiding you. You know, I think we all sort of go through a process. And all the students who come to us at Ananda, it's always the same story. Yeah, maybe I was raised in some religion or not, but you know, then I did other things, let's just say. And then finally, when I was in my, 20s, 30s, so on, I came back to the spiritual path. And so there tends to be this, you know, the child grows up, goes out into the world, gets into trouble usually, and learns through the hard school of Knox. But basically, there comes a point when we stop listening. Meditation in the inner path is listening, asking, consulting with your heart. And that's when we make that connection. We can't love somebody we don't know, but if we want to know, be still and know. Because out of that stillness, out of that quiet voice, comes the peace which gives all understanding. That's the tradition. Unity and Ananda and lots of different people throughout the world are realizing that as successful as we can be in making really cool cell phones, along with atom bombs and other things, it's not enough. It'll never be enough. And the joy that I felt in those children in Pakistan who had nothing, I and some of my friends were helping these people. They had a horrible monsoon flood a couple of years ago, which is when I met them online. And they had nothing, you know, no toys. But their happiness is still possible, okay? It's not about things. We've just been trained to like a lot of things. I don't mind having things, but it just isn't enough. And so divine friendship is learning to be a friend with the divine within. So let's have a few moments of quiet
music.
Oh,
total meditation.
Yeah.
and music.
Okay, so sit up straight, smile, close your eyes, lift your gaze behind the forehead, gazing up, as it were, I lift up my eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. I'd like to read this simple passage from Metaphysical Meditations. As I radiate sympathy and goodwill to others, I open the channel for God's love to come to me. Divine love is the magnet that attracts all goodness, all blessedness. So breathe in nice and slowly with a sense of joy. Inhale. And let the breath out. Pause for just a moment. Smile. Inhale. Just hold the breath lightly, distilling its goodness, its grace. Exhale. Pause and smile. One more time. Inhale. Feel holding the breath with the goodness of life and love and spirit. Exhale into stillness and back into natural breathing. Nothing fancy, just be still with goodness and gladness in your heart. A smile on your lips and in your eyes. There is no God but God, no good but God, no thing but God. God alone, God alone.